Coming up on the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast, one of Indy's top tech success stories celebrates a huge acquisition. A Fort Wayne startup makes a big splash. New tech helps esports players recover from injury. New research shines a spotlight on the pandemic's impact on Hoosier students. How does the Horizon League fit into the changing college landscape? And an indie nonprofit helps Hoosiers discover Broadway. Welcome to the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. I'm Andy Ober. One of Indianapolis's groundbreaking tech startups is cashing in on its success. Lessonly has been acquired by California-based Seismic. Lessonly CEO Max Yoder spoke with Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick about what the deal means for the state's tech movement.
Last time we were talking, I was in my attic, so it's good to be in an office. It's great to be back. Thanks for being here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, this is a big week. I mentioned you're an online training technology software company. Talk about this combination, the acquisition by Seismic, a company based in San Diego. You've been working with them for 3 years, so you know each other well. What is the deal all about?
Yeah, this is something that the market has said needs to happen. Seismic makes content, we make training, and people want to buy those from one vendor. So we've been staying really close to the company since 2018. Seismic just announced passing $200 million in annual revenue maybe 2 months ago. So big business, you know, and we're not too shabby ourselves. So coming together, we're going to be able to do some really, really neat things.
Max, talk about your growth in the company. Lessonly launched, as I said, just under a decade ago, 2012. Talk about the growth and what's really fueled that traction over the last nearly 10 years.
Yeah, so it's been an amazing, you know, in July 5th, 2012 is when we started. 9 years later, it's just been incredible to end the decade this way is a dream come true. And I think what's really made it work is we've had this mission of helping people do better work. And we fuel that mission by bringing on new customers and aligning our team around this mission of helping people do better work and then putting together a set of values that help us do work together in ways that we think are healthy, collaborative, productive. That's been the secret sauce. You know, we have tried to make sure we only grew as fast as we grew without jeopardizing our culture and our capital efficiency. So those are kind of two things that keep us in check. We're not going to grow so fast that it diminishes our culture or our capital efficiency. And that's been a big deal to us, helped us out in a big way.
Hey, Max, talk about, in your opinion, what this deal means for the Indiana tech community, because I think it has implications, impact beyond Lessonly to the broader Indiana tech movement.
Yeah, this is so cool because this was a big deal and our teammates have shares in Lessonly. Every teammate gets shares in Lessonly. So this is changing people's lives, right? And this is going to plant some seeds that we're going to see grow 1 year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, a decade from now. I don't know what they're going to be, but I'm really excited to see just how much this is going to change our community. Seismic's going public. They're going to, not imminently, but you know, let's say the next 1, 2, 3 years, they've got their eyes on a public offering and they're going to take us with them, right? We're one team now. So that's going to be a neat thing to bring to this city because they're going to be making heavy investments in Indianapolis. We were already going to hire a lot of people in Indianapolis. We're going to hire a lot more now. So that's going to be cool. And you know, we had a bunch of coastal venture firms that had invested in Lessonly. They did well in this deal. They'll be back. You know, so there's going to be a lot of different ripple effects that I can't wait to watch.
Yeah. And you mentioned the Coastal VC. Does this send a signal in a lot of ways? And there have been other developments, too. But this your deal, what you've grown here and now been able to make happen with Seismic. Others, when you talk about venture capital coming into Indiana, will help that process.
Yeah, the signal's been sent. They want to be here. You know, what we need to be doing is building companies that have missions, that are growing capital efficiently, that are willing to take a little bit of money to grow a little bit faster. You know, everybody's got their own kind of tempo for how they run their businesses. We couldn't have done this without the venture community, and they're sold on this place, right? We just got to be building the companies they can come invest in.
Yeah, I think one other element that's interesting to me, at least, is there's a whole talent attraction and the seeds of talent attraction that have been planted here over the last number of years. The Orr Fellowship program, which connects young folks with opportunities here. You were part of that Orr Fellowship, right?
I was. I worked for Chris Baggett right out of college. What a great guy to work for. You know, Exact Target co-founder, now runs Cluster Truck. That was my boss out of college. And, you know, what he told me to do is save money. You can control your own destiny, you know, get your student loans paid off and then start stacking away money so that you can do what you want. And that helped me build this company. So I can't thank the Orr Fellowship enough. Can't thank Chris enough, among many, many people in this city.
Do you think, Max, as we wrap up here, that, you know, there seems to be a lot of momentum here in Indianapolis and statewide in the tech movement, that this really is another example of that, that momentum, that flywheel beginning to turn a bit faster?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. This is going to be so cool. I mean, ideally, what we've done here at Lesson Lee is build something to this point using a certain set of principles. And the people who on this team, you know, have seen those principles, who want to go do it themselves, you know, we'll be supportive of that in a big way. And ideally, we've laid some sort of a blueprint to help them do that.
Max Yoder, the co-founder, the CEO of Lesson Lee, a big acquisition this week by Seismic. Max, thanks for joining us. We look forward to continuing to follow your story in the months and years ahead.
As always, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Fort Wayne-based startup Pond is making a splash in the nonprofit sector and beyond. The company hopes to become a technology source for nonprofits nationwide. Co-founder and CEO Mitch Stein came on the show with more.
Yours is a great story, I think. So quickly, I want to get into how you got into this startup business. You grew up in Fort Wayne, college in Philadelphia. You went out, you're on Wall Street, right? You were at Goldman Sachs in the investment banking world for 7 years. What led you to the startup world?
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting backstory that not super common trajectory, but I worked in covering a lot of technology businesses in the software space, internet space, worked with a lot of marketplaces. And I saw the power of how marketplaces, when they're done well, can really transform industries. Whenever you're taking on a market with disaggregated supply or disaggregated demand and a lot of information asymmetry, I covered companies like Expedia and Zillow and CarGurus or Carvana. You know, that's a really intimidating big purchase decision for a buyer. And historically, they were really at a disadvantage. And by bringing all that information and making things comparable, trustworthy, they really expanded those markets in an unrecognizable way. And outside of work, I was getting really involved in the nonprofit space and saw what a struggle it was for people to make the most of the best tools and technologies that were being developed. And it was just something where I couldn't sleep at night, and I really wanted to make the jump and go do something about it.
So, Mitch, give us the model and how Pond works, because you're described as a small startup with a big heart, and you're basically aggregating resources and content to help nonprofits.
Yeah, so the traditional marketplace model is you've got a buyer who needs something and they're going out and putting all the effort in to go find it. They find the options, they compare them. The truth of the matter is, in the nonprofit space, people are unbelievably stretched for time, for resources, often don't have a lot of expertise in the area of technology, and they don't really trust a lot of the vendors. If you're trying to sell me something, then it's hard for me to trust you. And so what we do is kind of flip the process on its head to say, you don't need to do the shopping. You just share the needs that you have. And we're going to go bring all the potential providers that could meet that need. They're going to express interest where they think it's relevant. And the nonprofit gets to decide who they want to connect with in a really efficient, streamlined way and actually get paid for having those conversations. So the marketing spend that a vendor or a seller is spending all the time on Google, Facebook, all kinds of advertising to get to the right customer, we're saying we're giving you a direct line to get to the most relevant person. You're going to pay for that, and we're going to share most of that value with the actual person. So they build up a balance on Pond that ultimately empowers them to be able to make those purchases that oftentimes aren't as affordable or in budget. So we're not only making the process simpler and more accessible, we're also actually helping them pay for the tools that they have trouble paying for.
Yeah, and increasingly nonprofits really looking at that, even though they're nonprofits, they're looking at that bottom line and how they can be more efficient. As before we wrap up, Mitch, talk about traction you're getting. I know you've got nonprofits connected not only in Northeast Indiana, but also around the country.
Yeah, so we are in 35 different states. We have over 250 nonprofits on the platform. I mean, everything on the platform is software, things delivered online, or remote and virtual services. So it's really accessible from anywhere in the country. We've already had 16 organizations just in a few months come through us to make those big purchases that can be really intimidating and save an average of 30% and save months and hundreds of hours worth of time. So it's been transformative. We've seen 35% growth in our membership just in the past month. And so we're really excited about where this is going forward and just getting it. There's 2 million nonprofits in the country, so we've got a lot of room to
Very
grow
good.
Within that market.
All right. Mitch Stein, the co-founder of Pond, Fort Wayne-based a startup that is making a splash, pun intended. Mitch, thanks for joining us and look forward to following your story.
Thanks so much. Appreciate you having me.
Indianapolis-based Pure Development has created one of Indy's newest mixed-use spaces. The Box Factory is next to the Mass Ave Cultural District in downtown Indianapolis. Principal Adam Seeger joined us with details on the project.
Let's talk about this development because it's unique for a number of reasons. First of all, Mass Ave, certainly one of the hottest, most high-profile districts in Indianapolis. This is the north side or the north end of Mass Ave. So this is kind of new territory that you're putting this mixed-use development in.
Exactly. We're, in essence, on the other side of the 65-70 split, so to speak, on Mass Avenue.
Yeah, and that so new territory there. The Box Factory is an existing building, as mentioned in the introduction, has been around for a long time, sat vacant for many years. You are transforming it into this mixed-use development. Give us a description of the Box Factory, this development, and what you're creating there.
Sure. Well, with the entire North Mass District, we really had this idea we loved, which is that, you know, new ideas need old buildings. And that's precisely what we've done with this historical redevelopment of the Box Factory. It attracted North Mass Boulder, 55,000 square foot, you know, bouldering gym, the cafe, top out cafe, co-working space. And that fresh idea, you know, really was available here at this, you know, older warehouse space. So we view this as we're reconnecting, you know, the neighborhoods through a vibrant new district. Where these new ideas, you know, can have old buildings and thrive.
Yeah. And we talked about the bouldering gym. I think that's an interesting development as part of the development. Talk about that. It's one of the largest or the largest of its kind in the country, I think. Talk about what that is and why that's important to have that kind of unique attraction to a mixed use development like this.
Sure. And I believe they are the, you know, the largest in the U.S. Come check it out. It's a lot of fun. It's but yes, they've got climbing walls. They've got in essence a cafe. They have, you know, lockers and free weights, cardio equipment, and they'll host events. They also have, you know, yoga classes, training classes, which for, you know, an office building to be adjacent or really included with that, we see that as what placemaking really is becoming. Right, that's where people want to live and work. People want to be active, you know, with work in mind. And so that's what we're extremely excited about and excited to have North Mass Boulder, Lewis and Wagner, Great Capital and Stens already, you know, leased and signed up in our building.
You talk about placemaking. And again, this northern end of the Mass Ave area, a lot of people thought Bottleworks maybe was the end of development there, but this extends that more. As we were talking before the interview, you will or you hope to certainly connect to a variety of neighborhoods in that area.
Exactly. And, you know, we're grateful for what Bottleworks did. They've got a, you know, amazing project. And what we're really trying to do is bring the neighborhoods near us and act as a nexus and connect down to Mass Avenue through that district. We see, you know, the reconnection of Lewis Street from 10th to 16th, an upgrade of the Monon Trail, a development in our district by Bukovic that's, you know, coming to plan. We're going to have 40 acres here of, you know, really active lifestyle, you know, placemake for the neighborhoods around, and then a connection through the cultural trail, Pogues Run, Monon, throughout the city.
Adam Seeger, principal of development, a Pure Development, the Box Factory, just now open, accepting tenants and welcoming them on the north end of Mass Ave. Adam, thanks for joining us. We look forward to following the progress of the development.
Thanks, Gary.
A Bloomington-based company says its Sumatape can help professional esports players recover from muscle and ligament problems developed from using their gaming devices. The IU Angel Network is now investing in the company. CEO Jeff Thinnes spoke with Kylie Valletta in the Business of Health.
So this story caught my attention from day one. Suma Forte could have focused on any athlete. So why did you decide to focus on esports?
Well, it actually started with my son. I had become convinced a couple of years ago that there's a lot of space in the market for a premium science-backed CBD brand. and I assembled a rock star advisory committee with professors from Harvard and other places, that people who were funded by the NIH for their research. And I visited hemp farms, I visited extractors, and I was ready to go with a product, but I didn't know where to start. And my 27-year-old son, Murtaugh, who went to Indiana University, by the way, said, "Dad, I've got the place to put the tip of the spearhead. It's the esports industry. It's a $160 billion industry. It has 2.8 billion gamers around the world. And there is no healthy performance brand in this space, let alone a CBD brand." So there we are. We started with esports.
So tell us, give us a quick introduction to the two products that you have on the shelves right now.
Sure. So we went out and talked to gamers and said, "What are your concerns? What health needs do you have that aren't being met?" Well, the first they said, our musculoskeletal concerns are huge. We have gamers retiring in their early 20s because they can no longer move their fingers or their wrists, or they have pain in their elbows. So they said, we need some help there. We went out and developed a kinesiology tape infused with our premium CBD, delivered transdermally straight to the point of inflammation and pain. But because it's transdermal, it also brings systemic benefits like helping them maintain a calm balance over a long period of time. So that was addressing the musculoskeletal need. They also said, we're spending hours in front of screens like I am right now, and we're really concerned about our long-term vision health. And in addition to that, we have to play for long periods of time, literally hours upon hours. We have to think quickly. We have to react quickly. We have to be accurate. We're really concerned about the drain on our cognitive health. So we sat back and said, okay, what do we do about that one? Well, we went out and found a nutrient producer in Iowa who was the first to patent lutein for macular degeneration, which is what's caused by the blue light or sunlight. So we used their lutein, it's called FluoroGlow, in a drink mix. We also added a nootropic that they actually make from spearmint, growing nowhere else than Indiana. So we have a nootropic that they call Numentix for the cognitive health. We add to that our CBD, but it wasn't enough for us to add CBD. We have it specially treated with a patented process that enhances the bioavailability by allowing our CBD to bypass the liver. So really, it's a trifecta of ingredients. And it's part of our narrative in esports, Kylie, to bring healthy rituals into this environment like you see in other more traditional sports.
Right. Speaking of traditional sports, I think we're all pretty familiar seeing the tape in the athletic world. So how is your tape different than the tape we're used to seeing in other sports?
Yeah, good question. So we have two different sizes of tapes. One is a standard strip. It's a 2-inch by 8-inch strip that has 12.5 milligrams of CBD in it. So on the outside, it'll look like a normal piece of tape, but it actually has the CBD that gets delivered transdermally. Then you see on this finger, what we call our slim strip. It's 2/3 of an inch by 5 inches long. So you can apply them on tops of the fingers, not impacting the tactile ability of the gamers, but you can use them like chiropractors are right now on the neck or other places, ankles, where you don't necessarily need to go with the larger strip. So we had to create special die cuts to have these sizes of tapes made for us. So they're really unique to Suma Forte, and we're super excited to be the first to market with them.
So tell us about the support you've gotten from IU. I know you and your son are an alumni. You have the funding, of course, and just the whole Bloomington ecosystem. What has that meant to your startup?
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. I'm just so grateful for what has happened to us in Bloomington, Indiana. I had a hunch because I'm a Hoosier. I grew up in Indianapolis. I went to IU Law School. My son went to undergrad at Kelly. So we're familiar with, you know, the Hoosier mentality. But we did take a little bit of a bet. We sold the family house at 24 years in Virginia and moved to Bloomington. Over the years, I've kept up my relationships with the law school, but also with the Kelly School of Business. And we thought maybe we'd get some support, some advice. Well, we've gotten more support and advice than we ever could have hoped for. We've hired people who were recommended by professors. We get advice, coaching advice from professors at the Kelly School and even the local Bloomington community. I didn't realize, but there are some gems of companies that we've tapped into, like This Is Blue Line, that does our creative work around the photography that you see on our website. And they're known nationally, but I didn't know they were there until we moved to Bloomington. And then along come the IU Angels. I wasn't aware of this angel network until Jason Whitney reached out to me. He kind of administers that program. Not only has he introduced us to investors, he's introduced us to people across the country who have connections to Indiana University, who have also become business partners with us, experts in CBD as well as esports. So really, you know, the benefits are beyond what I even hoped for. And I had pretty high hopes when we moved there.
All right, Jeff. Well, congrats on the funding. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you, Kylie. I appreciate it.
Remember, you can catch Inside Indiana Business Television on stations throughout the state every weekend. Head to InsideIndianaBusiness.com to check listings. New research data is putting a focus on the substantial impact the COVID-19 pandemic has had on Hoosier students. Indiana Higher Education Commissioner Teresa Lubbers and Indiana Secretary of Education Katie Jenner broke down the numbers in our Eye on Education segment.
Well, let's talk about this. This is data. I mean, I think the assumption is there was certainly a big impact on students from the pandemic. But as you look at the numbers, you look at the data, and Katie, I'll start with you. Some real significant academic impact, especially when it comes to math.
Yes, that's true. We in Indiana, we're fortunate enough to have National Center for Assessment really take a deep dive into our Indiana data. And as you mentioned, we did have the greatest impact as a state in math. That's trending across the country. And then a moderate impact in English language arts. Our racially and ethnically diverse students and low income students, special ed, EL, we saw the biggest hit there with the growth of those students. And we have a lot of work to do. And we as educators are certainly ready and eager to help our students.
Yeah, and certainly the bottom line, the data really highlighting or really underscoring the importance of in-person learning.
Absolutely. I cannot emphasize that impact enough. And it actually had a higher impact than we even anticipated. In-person learning is so essential for our students, and we have to do everything we can to keep our students in the classroom in Indiana this school year, which is presenting yet another year of obstacles.
Yep, and certainly the impact, according to the data, extends beyond K-12. Teresa Lubbers at the higher education level, financial aid filings, FAFSA down, and that translates into enrollment and ultimately attainment when it comes to education in Indiana.
That's so true. I mean, that 5 to 6% number that you talked about for FAFSA being down is overall FAFSA. Well, if you're talking about the graduating high school class of 2021, it was down about 10%.
Wow.
And for low income students, down about 20%. And this is reflected in our college going rate, which has dropped 6% in the last 5 years from 65 to 59%. And again, as Katie has said, you know, we're seeing a disproportionate impact of COVID. For our low-income minority first-generation students, the impact has been even greater, more severe.
Yeah, and that attainment issue that you've talked about and we've talked about on the show with you on a number of occasions. Interesting in the data, as you look at attainment at the height of the disruption, unemployment from COVID, Hoosiers with a bachelor's degree, the unemployment rate was 5%. Those with a high school diploma or equivalency was 13.5%. So the numbers paint the picture you're trying to illustrate.
Well, and that disparity existed before, but during COVID, it became even more glaring.
Yep.
So yes, absolutely. Your level of education was determinative in terms of whether or not you kept a job, lost a job, or had opportunity for economic mobility. So we need to use these last couple of years to really make sure that we're doubling down on our low-income students.
Katie, as you look going forward, K-12, this is obviously a fluid situation, but what's next? How are you going to use this data and continue to try to enhance the learning experience in this, you know, uncertain environment?
So we certainly have to start with the data we have at a state level. Local schools also have data sets as well that they are using to really inform student learning ahead. We were fortunate enough to have our state general assembly provide about $150 million for communities to come around and support our schools. Schools can't do it alone. It takes a full community working together. And then, you know, federally, we've received a lot of funding where schools are really working to get the greatest return on investment for those dollars.
Yeah, and very quickly, only have about 20 seconds, Teresa, but the fact that you two are together, K-12, higher education, I think is reflective of the fact that you really do work together when it comes to attainment and, you know, college credits in high school, all those types of things.
we're really encouraging students to get college credits when they're in high school. We know it saves them a lot of time and money. And so, yes, the Indiana College Corps is a way to get 30 credit hours and start college. And if you get that in high school, it can cost no more than $750. It's a good buy.
All right. Thank you very much. Teresa Lubbers, the commissioner of the Indiana Commission for Higher Education, also Indiana Secretary of Education, Katie Jenner. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
The college athletics landscape is changing rapidly with the new name, image, and likeness policy and the recent decision by Oklahoma and Texas to join the Southeastern Conference. Where does the Horizon League fit in? Commissioner Julie Rowe Lash spoke with Bill Benner on Inside Indiana Sports.
You bring a really interesting perspective, your past duties with the NCAA in enforcement, as we're going to be enforcing an entirely different set of rules, who knows, but also with the so-called mid-majors, of which the Horizon League is a collection of, non-football playing, most of them. As this all shakes out and the NCAA looks to a constitutional convention overhaul in November, what do you think some of the implications are for your league and like schools?
Sure, and I think you noted there's really two parallel tracks of change happening, right? The first is just this now realignment at the Power Five level and some questions as to whether or not the Power Five will become a Power Four. And will some of those conferences further consolidate? I think the impact on the rest of us, so to speak, is one, surely there will be some sort of diluted impact down the road. I think it's also, though, a larger just mentality, a mindset potential change of, is expansion appropriate for any conference? Are members in the right league? And to me, that's really a call for unity and looking at why are the current 12 members in the Horizon League and what are our key attributes that we really do find in common and unify around to bring these opportunities. So I think it's frankly an important inflection point, which can be the right point, especially if you've already got the groundwork laid and noting what your common denominators are.
Of course. Go ahead, Julie.
I was going to say the second big issue, which again is a parallel track, is the NCAA has announced this really large overhaul, probably transformation, in terms of the way the association is structured and what services they deliver. I've heard the word decentralization mentioned several times. Two interesting points there. One of our very own Horizon League presidents is going to serve on this really elite constitutional committee. So we're really glad that we're going to have a real point of influence in the room with President Chris Howard from Robert Morris University serving. And then two, I think decentralization means more opportunity for conferences to lead. If the national office is doing less, that means conferences need to do more. So I welcome this opportunity.
Of course, you know, Division I is such a large tent with so many varied institutions of all size and scope and mission. But all of them, including the Horizon League, are dependent largely on the revenues generated by March Madness and the NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament. Would you see down the road that the tournament remains pretty much as is?
I don't know that my crystal ball is very clear these days, Bill. It's a little foggy, but I do think fundamentally the NCAA really needs to do two things really well, right? Provide incredible championships, of which they provide 90. Many people forget that, but 90, two of which on the men's women's basketball side, we have become the hallmark. And then two, they search for that and provide that proverbial level playing field through their regulatory functions. I think if of any championship that works incredibly well, and we just experienced all of it right here this past March, is the men's basketball tournament. I really think that would probably be the last to change. And the reason why is because we do see the Cinderella stories still happening on an annual basis. And that's what generates the national and even international interest. So I think if there's any championship that is perhaps more insulated than others from potential change, it's that one.
Julie, talk about real quickly, again, your role in enforcement and new rules coming down the road and name, image, likeness, as quickly as you can. How do you sum up how the NCAA or member institutions will begin to enforce that rule and maintain that level playing field?
Well, I think the real wild card here has been this Supreme Court decision with Alston, which really has challenged the NCAA to say, hey, anytime you're going to have a national rule that restricts any sort of activity like name, image, likeness, you need to have a pretty good darn reason for it. And that's why the NCAA backed off restricting that July 31 of this year and said, we're no longer going to restrict that. I think that's going to be the move. So frankly, we're going to see less regulation, not more. And that is why I think conferences will need to say, within our footprint, within our membership, are there certain rules that we want to uphold perhaps more so than others? And all of that hopefully will still happen under this big Division I tent that we all are proud to be a part of.
Hey, Julie, as we wrap up, the Horizon League, of course, the men's and women's basketball tournament is taking place at the Farmers Coliseum at the State Fairgrounds. You had a presence, a NASCAR presence, during the State Fair. That was pretty cool.
What an incredible opportunity. We did that because it came to us through Richard Childress Racing and Austin Dillon, who's obviously a top NASCAR driver. But they gave us an opportunity to do a Horizon League wrap. You don't see too many Division I conferences doing that, but we are committed to the Indianapolis community. We love our championship being here, March 7th and 8th, for those of you circling it on your calendar of 2022. And as part of that, we wanted to provide this photo opportunity for fans. And I've been out there a couple days working, and they love it. People just want to look in the car. So we it was a great opportunity, and we look forward to continuing to just partner with this community in any and every way we can.
Well, Julie Roelage, we certainly appreciate you being on the program. Great perspective, and we'll see how it all unfolds as we move and turn the pages of the calendar. Julie, thanks for being on with us.
Thank you.
And finally this week, Discovering Broadway is an Indianapolis nonprofit working with big stage producers and directors to pull back the curtain and give Central Indiana a behind-the-scenes look at what goes into a Broadway-style show. The organization's latest production is Hamlet. CEO Joel Kirk joined us with details.
This is really a very interesting concept, really giving Central Indiana a peek behind the curtain at how a Broadway show comes together. Talk about Discovering Broadway, your idea. Why you came up with the idea in the first place?
Well, most people aren't aware that musicals don't come fully formed from the North Pole. It takes years and years of really exciting trial and error. And we do that in crowded, expensive rehearsal studios in New York. And it was simple. It was just the question, do we have to do it that way? And is there a better way of doing it? And can we move that to a first-class community where people are kind and supportive and you just have this beautiful hospitality? And that's really one of the many things that Indiana is exceptional at. So starting in a place like Indiana, which always gets the Broadway tours, so making the Broadway beginnings where Broadway usually ends, that was exciting to me, and bringing it back to my own community. So we host the creative teams and casts of pre-Broadway shows, and they develop the show here and then premiere songs in concert with Hoosiers.
And you've been busy. How many shows? And I know I think you're on your final show, Hamlet, the production.
Yeah.
Talk about the productions. How busy you've been, because you've been very busy.
In February, we hosted Sir Elton John's The Devil Wears Prada. In May, we hosted Ever After, and tomorrow we premiere the music from Hamlet. So, like you said, 6 months, 3 shows, and it's been incredibly rewarding. There's 36 artists involved in Hamlet, and they're all performing in the rehearsal space behind me. So we're rocking and rolling.
So that's a busy place. You know, what I think is interesting is what you've created there, Discovering Broadway, as part of a larger arts and cultural community in Central Indiana and in our state, and that has a direct connection to quality of place and quality of life and the ability to attract and keep talent and business and all those types of things. So you're a part of that. I know the corporate community is stepping up. You just landed a big sponsorship.
Yeah, I'm proud to announce that our largest corporate sponsorship to date is Allied Solutions. They'll be coming in to sponsor not just 1, 2, or 3, but 4 of our shows.
Wow.
The first one being Hamlet. And part of that sponsorship is providing 10 scholarship slots to at-risk youth to be able to have access to our master classes. So while those Broadway artists are here developing their shows, they also teach classes. So we're proud to be partnering with Allied Solutions and thrilled for what this means for the arts and culture community here.
Yeah, Joel, you're a New York City theater, a director, a producer, Ball State grad, so you got those Hoosier roots. What's next for you? How do you see, or where do you see taking this organization going forward?
You know, like you said, a great place like Central Indiana, partnering with an organization like ours, it's not just our mission to further the arts and culture. A good mission is a good movement, and we want the arts and culture to flourish here, not just with Broadway and Discovering Broadway, but with film, with television. We want the
best artists in the world coming here and coming from here. That's what we want.
It's a great story. Discovering Broadway, the founder and CEO of Discovering Broadway is Joel Kirk. Joel, I know you're very busy. Thanks for taking a break. We look forward to following your future growth going forward.
Thank you. Great talking with you today.
All right.
That wraps up this week's Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. Remember, you can find all of this week's TV segments, as well as the top business news from throughout the state, at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our platform of free e-newsletters. This is Andy Ober for Inside Indiana Business.